This is a podfic of Baby, Do You Understand Me Now? Written by Nerds and the Like, and read by Bobbery Shuffles. The first time Hardison ever really thinks about Elliot Spencer's sexuality is the rehab job. When Elliot tries to pull the moves on the receptionist, and Hardison improvises an alternate solution. And Elliot fucking freezes in a way that he never has before. Looking back on it, Hardison should have seen this coming. He hasn't known Elliot long, but this guy is red state to his core. Of course he was going to lose it at this, even the suggestion that he might be involved with another guy. But Hardison doesn't have to let it slide. He wasn't always as alright with the gays as he is now. The Chicago foster system isn't a great place to learn about the nuances, but once Tyrell came out just a few years after Hardison started living with Nana, she'd laid down the law. They were all God's children, and anyone who had a problem with Tyrell had a problem with her. So, Hardison's been trying to be a good ally for most of his life, and that means stepping in when other straight guys aren't getting the message. So after they walk away from the receptionist, Hardison turns to Elliot and says, "Dude, I didn't mean to step on your toes or whatever, but it's 2008. You've gotta cool with that shit." "What the fuck are you talking about, Hardison? I was doing just fine until you decided to change direction midway upstream." "Look, man," Hardison starts, but Elliot has already grumped all the way down the hallway. It looks like Elliot's gonna be a long job on this one. They're halfway through formulating a plan when Elliot interrupts. "Sophie shouldn't take this mark," he says. "Not like that, at least. It won't work."
"And why not?"
Sophie asks incredulously. "He's gay," Elliot says. "Look at him. The skinny jeans, the shaped eyebrows, the underwear." He points as he talks, gesturing to a slip of the underwear just visible above the waistband of jeans. "Definitely gay." "He could be metrosexual," Hardison says, "because he's committed to educating Elliot, getting him to stop leaning on stereotypes. Lots of men these days are learning that." "No," Elliot says. "He's gay. Check." "This is just profiling," Hardison explains, even as he does the appropriate search. "Just because..." And then he stops. "We have a hit on m4mdating.net. How did we miss that before?"
"We weren't looking for it," Nate answers, clearly in the process of reconfiguring the con.
"It's very distinctive underwear," Elliot says. "It's still profiling," Hardison says, "even if you're right. Because a guy like Elliot having a gaydar that good isn't really comforting. Make someone and call Tyrell. Make sure he's staying safe."
"I can do the grift," Elliot says. And that's a genuine surprise.
"It'll be better for me to be on the inside. And we know Hardison ain't gonna do it." If Hardison thought he could pull it off, he'd volunteer. Hell, he'd have said something anyway, if he wasn't so shocked. Elliot hadn't ever given off a vibe that he'd be okay with playing gay. But they all do shit for a con. And maybe it's Elliot's homophobia is getting better after a few months in Massachusetts. But he doesn't have too much time to ponder, because the team nods and they break, and Hardison has to make a whole new identity for Elliot and set up a remote hack, and he doesn't have time to navigate Elliot's relationship to gay people right now. It's not really his damn job. But no one else is gonna do it. The good news is that the job goes fine. Elliot unbuttons half his shirt and plays bashful. Turns out this marks into blue collar types. And the good thing, too, because once Elliot gets into his apartment, they find the real contracts, plus evidence of mob ties. More than enough to bring him down and get their client his reputation back. Plus, a little extra for his troubles. They're out as a team at a bar after a job, one that isn't McRory's for a change. They got what they needed out of the job, but it got a little too exciting for Hardison's preference. The Mark figured out half the plan a couple days in, and everyone had to scramble and send Parker in as a backup grifter, which she's getting better at, but she's no Sophie. But they pulled it off, so they've toasted their success and drifted out across the bar. Parker is taking Nate for everything he's worth at the dartboard. Sophie is selling someone an island that she almost certainly doesn't own. Elliot is over at the bar, and Hardison is just drinking his beer, watching his team do their thing. It's all very impressive. And then Elliot is moving. He's sitting down next to a man at the bar, leaning in a way he doesn't do when he's trading war stories. The guy smiles at Elliot, and Elliot does that little half-smile back that either means a con or a really good time. Elliot flags the bartender down, and they keep talking. And Hardison would keep an eye on that situation, except that Parker just nudged Nate's elbow, and the dart went wide enough to almost hit someone
And when Hardison is done trying to help smooth that over, both Elliot and the man are standing to leave. Elliot goes to the coat rack and comes back with two jackets, and Hardison has just enough time to catch him before he makes it back to the bar. "What are you running, man?" Hardison asks quietly. "What?" Elliot replies. "Look, I know we all do cons for fun. I mean, God knows what Sophie's up to right now. But what'd this guy do? I mean, moving him out of the bar is taking a little too far just for fun. Unless he is really shitty and needs to be taught a lesson. Then he should at least let us help." "I don't need your damn help, Hardison. This isn't a job." "Then what are you doing?" "I'm trying to get laid. It's not fucking rocket science." "But you..." Hardison starts as the whole world tilts around him. "Really thought that after all the shit you talk, you wouldn't make this an issue." Elliot pushes past him. And that's when Hardison's brain manages to actually catch up with what is happening. What Elliot thinks he might have a problem with. But Elliot's out of reach, and Hardison has no fucking clue what he'd say if Elliot had stuck around to talk about this. "That's not your boyfriend, right?" the man at the bar asks when Elliot gets back. "I don't want to get involved in..." he waves his hand vaguely between Elliot and Hardison. "Whatever is going on there." "No, no," Elliot reassures him. "A friend. Wanted to make sure I was safe to drive."
"Good friend."
"Yeah," Elliot says with a bite that suggests that he knows Hardison is still listening. Hardison is left still mostly staring at the bar where Elliot was when Parker pops up beside him counting 20s from Nate's wallet.
"What's going on?" she asks.
"I think Elliot might be bisexual."
"What's that?"
she is still half distracted by the money.
"He likes girls and guys both, not just one or the other."
"Oh," Parker says and pauses a moment.
"Doesn't everyone?"
"Usually not people like Elliot," Hardison says, not really answering the question, or at least you don't usually think of people like him.
"But his hair is so soft," Parker says as if this is obvious.
"It's good that men and women can play, both play with it."
"I guess so," Hardison says.
Elliot looks grumpier than usual when he walks into Nate's apartment the next day. And thank goodness Hardison is the only one who's shown up yet. Even Nate's still upstairs, probably trying to work up the energy to get coffee. Hardison is testing his slideshow about their next mark on the monitors before the meeting.
"Look, man," he says when he sees Elliot. Elliot just stares back at him in a way that still scares Hardison a little bit, even if he knows for absolute sure that Elliot would never really hurt him.
"I'm sorry about last night," Hardison says.
"Are we gonna have a problem?" Elliot says, bracing like he's about to fight.
"What? No, of course not. I was just surprised. I never thought that..."
Elliot's stare is truly unnerving.
"Look, man," Hardison says. "I got no problem with gay people or bisexual people. Whatever's going on here."
Elliot gets his tilt of the head that could be a nod.
"I mean, my brother," Hardison gestures vaguely, wishing Elliot would give him something to work with.
"Like I said, I'm sorry. We don't have a problem."
"Last night, seemed like we might."
Hardison decides to give the truth a shot. "Seems safest."
"Yeah, well, my experience of gay people doesn't really include people who look like you."
"Then maybe you just don't know the right gay people."
Yeah. Apparently. Maybe, I guess, I just expected you to say something sooner?"
"Don't ask, don't tell." Hardison cringes.
"That would have been Elliot's policy, not always by choice.
And I wasn't exactly trying to keep it a secret. But it's also none of your damn business what I do off the job," Elliot says.
"But you freaked out when I pretended to be your boyfriend back in L.A.
"I told you. You changed the con when I had already started."
That was what he had said at the time.
"Look, man," Hardison says. "I'm sorry. I hope you had a good time last night, really. And we're cool.
Now I know."
"Now you know."
But because Hardison couldn't keep his damn mouth shut, that's not the end of it.
"So," Parker says, turning to Elliot after their briefing, "Hardison says you like boys and girls."
"Parker, you don't just ask people that in front of people who don't know," Hardison says, looking over at Nate and Sophie.
"I did know, actually," Sophie says easily.
"I don't care," Nate says, going to make more coffee.
Elliot shrugs.
"So, Hardison says that not everybody likes both?"
"Well, there are opinions about that," Elliot says, leaning back in his chair.
"I mean, some people do just like one gender or the other. Some people don't like either. And if you ask people outright, most men will say they only like women, and women will say they only like men. And people who are gay, or really anybody who has another answer, tend to stick together."
"Why?" Parker just seems so genuinely confused that Hardison can't imagine even someone as prickly as Elliot getting huffy about it. Because society says that any other answer is wrong. Parker makes a face. Yeah, I think that's bullshit too, Elliot says. Because the truth is, if you ask a few more questions, most people like both. At least, a little bit. It's the first thing you learn as a grifter, Sophie adds. Confidence is sexy, more than any one gender. Huh, Parker says. So Hardison also says that most people who like both don't look like you. Woman, Hardison says. Elliot frowns at him. Hardison isn't exactly right on that. He tilts his head and gives them a look to emphasize the innuendo. Personally confirmed that lots of men who look like me want to sleep with men as well as women. But Hardison is right. When some person off the streets thinks of someone who looks like men, they don't think of me. But that doesn't mean that they're right. So why do they think that? Well, partially because a lot of the people who look like me don't admit that they like men too. It's harder to do the things society tells you not to when you're in a tiny town. You don't have as many places to go. But just because it's hard doesn't mean people don't do it. Hardison had known that, of course. Gay people come from everywhere, but they leave and go to San Francisco or New York or Los Angeles or Boston, like Elliot did. Right. After that, Hardison looks into it, checking for the signs he'd missed. If he wants to run his own crew someday, he can't keep missing things like this. He finally bothers to track Elliot's cut of that very first job and finds a million scattered between the Pride Community Service Organization, the Fairness Campaign, and Lexington PFLAG, and another million American Veterans for Equal Rights, and the Transgender American Veterans Association. It was nearly half the yearly operating budget for each org. So Hardison matches Elliot's donations, an apology Elliot will probably never find out about. And now Hardison knows. Elliot Spencer is bi, and the world keeps spinning. He really isn't even as quiet about it as Hardison would have expected. He just hadn't been looking. Because there Elliot is, flirting with men on and off the job, and picking up clues from marks that only Sophie usually sees, and still not letting anyone talk shit about small towns. One day, Hardison walks into McRory's, and Elliot's sitting there with a woman, about his age, long dark brown hair. They look close, but not flirty. Elliot waves him over. Hardison, he says, this is my friend Deb, from Kentucky. Deb, Hardison's one of my partners in the consulting firm. She looks him over and, with an accent that has become very familiar, says, you hit stuff professionally too? Hardison has to laugh. No, he's a professional pain in my ass, Elliot says, with what Hardison can only hear as camaraderie. I do tech, mostly, Hardison explains, though I'm gonna have to learn to hit back if Elliot keeps teaching Parker his moves. Elliot smirks at that. Deb laughs. Another co-worker? Elliot nods. Small. Blonde. Very strong. So, you're type? Deb asks. Elliot waves her off. He's been the same since high school, Deb tells Hardison conspiratorially. Tiny girl, big personality. It was the only thing that could knock him on his ass. Well, that and Noah Thomas. I like her, Elliot, Hardison says. Can we keep her? I'm afraid my partner won't be happy with that, Deb says. She wanted to get rid of me for a weekend, but not forever. If you pull a seat up and buy me a beer, I've got enough stories to keep Elliot blushing for hours. I don't want to intrude, Hardison protests, because his Nana raised him better, and as desperately as he wants to hear those stories, Elliot deserves... Oh, just get it over with it. Elliot says, that's a fucking invitation if Hardison's ever heard one. Hardison buys them both a drink, and sure enough, Deb's got stories. He hears about Deb lying to her parents about being a cousin's house so she and Elliot could drive Elliot's beat-up old truck an hour and a half to Lexington to go to a gay bar. And what do you tell the folks? Hardison asks. Elliot shrugs. They never asked. I was so damn nervous the first time, Deb laughs. Our fake IDs were shit, and I thought the bouncer would have us out in a heartbeat. The bouncers and bartenders at Crossings didn't give a shit, though, Elliot says. Ever. Fuck, I think stressed out teenagers were half their clientele. Remember when we saw Sam McNair there? Deb asks. And we never made eye contact with him again. And then there was that time the car broke down halfway home, and we had to walk to the nearest gas station and actually call my cousin at midnight to come get us. Elliot laughs a little. Closest I ever got to my parents actually asking where I'd been.
when my car didn't start Sunday morning. Hey, you got off easy. I woke up with my Tia with that call, and I never heard the end of it. Hardison laughs his ass off as they talk about fumbling and flirting their way through being 16 years old at a gay bar. Remember that talent show? Deb says. Elliot actually genuinely smiles at that, and damn, Hardison's not sure he's ever actually seen Elliot smile this much. We sang old Jackson, old Johnny Cash and June Carter song, Elliot says. Hardison has never heard the song, but he's recently learned that Elliot has pipes, so he's sure he was great. And I sang Johnny in a cowboy hat and boots, Deb says with a grin. Elliot was a beautiful June in his sister's sundress. And now Hardison has to see the video. And they let y'all get away with that? Elliot shrugs. It was a joke. It's amazing what they'll let you get away with as a joke. The quarterback in a dress. Hilarious. Like we weren't both having the time of our lives, Deb says. Elliot just smiles at that. Sometimes Hardison looks at his life and he wonders how the hell he got here, because he somehow wound up doing movie night with two of the scariest people he knows. Not that he's scared of either of them. They'd never hurt him. Push him off a building, maybe? But to be fair, they do that themselves. It's not like movie night is a regular thing, but it happens often enough that there's a routine. They all wind up at Hardison's apartment, because Parker still pretends they don't know where she lives, and Hardison has seen Elliot's apartment. He knows that man can afford something better, but Hardison has the giant TV and the best couch and actually soft blankets. And he even has a nice kitchen that mostly Elliot uses. Good microwave, though. Very smart. Programmed with all kinds of Hot Pocket settings. So, they're all at Hardison's, like usual, and Elliot takes one end of the couch, while Hardison takes the other, and Parker, they leave the chair free for her. But she never sits on it for the whole movie. She finds somewhere she's comfortable. It doesn't usually look comfortable to anyone else, but it works for her. And Elliot makes some fancy popcorn on the stovetop and drinks a beer, while Hardison works his way through an orange soda. Parker has gotten really into popcorn with chocolate chips on it, so Hardison makes sure to keep some of those around. And then they take turns choosing the movie, which is how Hardison has gotten them in through every Alien movie, and next time he's gonna start on Men in Black. Elliot usually chooses spy-type movies, which seems a little on the nose for him, but hey, he's also got a weird thing for Christopher Nolan movies that Hardison hasn't quite figured out. Sometimes Hardison does wonder if Elliot chooses Bond movies because they've got equal opportunity eye candy. Not that he's been paying any attention to Elliot's taste in men. None of his damn business. But even he knows what Daniel Craig looks like, and damn. But tonight is Parker's turn to choose a movie, which is always an adventure. He has absolutely no idea how she picks. Sometimes he thinks that she just chooses at random. Sometimes it's a rom-com. Sometimes it's a pretentious French film. Once it was a very graphic indie horror flick that Hardison never wants to do that again. This time, she's been pulled out a movie out of the ether that Hardison's never heard of before. The Birdcage. I've seen it, Elliot says. It's good. Well, that gives Hardison absolutely nothing to work with, but he's pretty sure Elliot would have mentioned if this were going to be a repeat of the Driller Killer incident, but only pretty sure. The first few minutes are good enough. Definitely not a horror movie. Robin Williams is doing his thing, and the drag show opening is fun. It's pretty 90s, but Hardison can dig old school. It's a good enough few minutes that Hardison doesn't even notice that Elliot's watching them. Mostly watching him. Parker probably noticed as soon as Elliot started, because she notices that kind of thing. That's not how Hardison is trained, though. But Hardison gets watching. Hell, you watch a Chris Rock bit with white folks, and he'd be watching, too. You gotta see where they laugh. Make sure it's the right places. Hardison thinks he's doing fine so far, but he can't really be sure. Even years in, Elliot's hard to read when he wants to be. He almost wants to say something, just so that it's the right thing, but he knows how Elliot feels about talking during movies. Though Parker gets away with it, because of course she does, and nothing Elliot has tried yet has stopped her. They don't seem to be getting along very well, Parker observes, as Robin Williams and his partner? Is that the right word? It seems like the safest choice. Anyway, Robin Williams and the person sometimes called Starina, and sometimes called Albert, are squabbling on screen. Hardison thinks she has a point, but Elliot just shrugs. Different people love each other differently. But they don't trust each other, Parker points out. Just watch the movie, Parker, Elliot says. See what you think. Elliot clearly likes this movie. Really likes it. Which is
Interesting. It doesn't seem like his usual kind of movie. And it can't just be a gay thing. Hardison has never seen people less like Elliot than a drag queen and a nightclub owner. Though, that wouldn't make a bad cover sometime. If it comes up. But Hardison thinks as Starina finally takes the stage, if it's the 90s and Elliot's still in Kentucky when this comes out, it might be the best he saw in a movie, even if the people are nothing like him. Hardison almost wants to ask. He looks over at Elliot. Elliot's pretending to watch the movie. Hardison wonders if Elliot's seen Brokeback Mountain. Seems more his speed of gay. Hardison will definitely not be asking Elliot that, though. He doesn't want to get punched. Or, more realistically, see Elliot get that uncomfortable. Robin Williams is hugging his son on screen when Parker speaks up again. He's a good dad. Elliot nods. He tries. Like anyone else. Not like everyone, Parker says. Elliot doesn't respond to that. She's a good dad, too, Parker says a few minutes later. Starina, Albert, whatever that character wants to be called, goes to see their son. It's sweet. A few minutes later, Parker's wrinkling her nose at the son's fiancé's family. Less good dad. Elliot snorts. You said it. They make it through more of the movie without Parker adding any commentary until the announcement that the fiancé's conservative family is coming to visit the nightclub. Until the son asks Robin Williams to play straight. Even Hardison can admit it's a hell of a scene. Hardison can hear the frown in Parker's voice when she speaks. He's got such good dads. Why would he want to change them for the bad dad? People do all sorts of things to feel accepted, Elliot says. Parker nods, which is why it's important that the good dad doesn't want to do things just to feel accepted. He's got his people. He doesn't need anything else. And maybe Hardison was wrong about these characters being so far away from Elliot. They aren't slick corporate types or young hot party gays. They feel more like real people than a lot of movie characters. Sometimes falling apart, sometimes being a little ridiculous. And they have a good life. Something Elliot probably wanted at 16. Something Hardison might want now. But that goes on the list of questions that Hardison isn't asking. Nearly half an hour later, Robin Williams hands the paperwork to Albert so that they can be as close to married as they were allowed back then. And Hardison's feeling a little more touched than he expected by that speech about sharing a life with someone. And suddenly, Parker is on the couch in between him and Elliot, and the big couch feels much smaller now. See, she's touching both of them, which is never an accident with Parker. Looks like he's not the only one feeling some kind of way. I see what you mean, she says to Elliot. Love looks different sometimes. Elliot nods roughly. I want that, Parker says. What do you want, Mama? Hardison asks gently. She tilts her head at the scene. Screen. I want that. The paperwork. Palimony. Whatever it's called. They're just doing it because they can't get married, Elliot explains. You don't need that anyway. You can get married. To anyone you want in Massachusetts anyway. I'm not getting married, Parker says vehemently. And anyways, it's about what happens to your stuff. It's about the people you choose. So I want one. If she falters but keeps going. If something happens to me, I don't want some random person I've never met to get my stuff. I want it to be you. You're my home. Half of what's mine is yours. She pauses and corrects. Not my money. You've got enough of your own. But she trails off. Hardison realizes that she's not just talking about him. He probably should feel jealous. He's not, though. Of course Parker wants to keep Elliot as close as she can. He doesn't blame her. She's right. He's home, too. Nothing's gonna happen to you, Parker, Elliot says. I promise. Parker shakes her head. You can't promise that. What we do is dangerous. We all know that. Nate and Sophie shot each other. You two almost got killed by a militia. I got stuck inside that building with the Steranko. And now we're going after Moreau. And we know that's dangerous. So we should be ready. Hardison meets Elliot's eyes. And he wishes that he saw more confidence there. But they both know she's right. All right, Hardison says. We don't have to do the whole legal rigmarole. I'll get the documents. And have them look like they were submitted 3 years ago. You just tell me what you want them to say. She squeezes his leg and looks back to the movie. Parker's still between them when Albert comes out wearing a suit, pretending to be the kind of man who the asshole senator will approve of. She must like the movie, or need them here for it at least. She doesn't usually sit this long. He looks so small, Parker says. Like it hurts. Probably does, Elliot says. Parker squeezes his leg this time. Elliot doesn't say anything else. But he doesn't flinch in a way, either. Boy, it looks like he could use a hug. But he wouldn't take one if Hardison offered. Oh, Parker says, sitting up suddenly. It's a con. They're trying to convince the assholes that they're not... She waves her hand. Presumably encompassing gay, Jewish, not cultural attaches, owning a drag bar, Parker frowns. They're worse at it than I am. Elliot snorts at that. Hardison chuckles himself. Parker takes the opportunity to steal his entire bowl of popcorn, pulls chocolate chips out of somewhere, and hauls herself into the ceiling, presumably to get a better view of the grand finale. Oh, Parker says when Albert walks in full drag, pretending to be Robert Williams' wife. So she's the grifter in this family. I knew they had to have one. Is that how you think family works? Elliot asks, but he's clearly teasing. It's how our family works, Parker responds. Aw, see? Parker says, after a few hilarious minutes as Robin Williams, the son, and the fiancé all try to help Albert fix his wig. That's what family's all about. Hardison thinks she might have a point, and he notices that Elliot doesn't disagree with her either. At least the son came around eventually, Parker says. Little shit, Elliot adds. He's not wrong. This kid put his parents through hell, spent a whole movie acting like he's ashamed of people who worked so hard to do right by him. Hardison wants Nana to reach into this movie and give that boy a talking to. Parker piped up again, right as the movie's about to end. I don't understand why the fiancé won't just stay with the son and Albert and them. She says she would like to have them as her family. And she can't. She doesn't have to go with the assholes, Parker says. People don't believe that they can do all those kinds of things for family, Elliot says. They don't realize they can choose. Seems like a bad way to do family, Parker says. You said it. Elliot replies. The movie ends with a drag number and a wedding, and this might be Hardison's favorite of Parker's picks so far. He looks over at Elliot, who feels to have finally relaxed as much as Elliot ever does, and Hardison's glad he passed whatever homophobia test Elliot was running in his mind. They don't talk about it, though, because they'd all die for each other, but these two won't talk about an emotion to save their lives. It's why he had to figure out real quick what pretzels meant a couple months back. So he just promises Parker he'll get to work on the paperwork tomorrow. And she smiles at him before she climbs out the window. And he hugs Elliot because Elliot will hate that. Or at least pretend to. I see why you like that movie, Hardison says. Yeah. And just like that, Elliot has his hackles up again. Yeah, Hardison says. The kid is a little shit, though. Elliot rolls his eyes and almost smiles. And that's a win. Hardison walks into McRory's and spots Elliot sitting at one of the tables with a woman with a dyed blonde pixie cut. Elliot waves him over. Client? Hardison asks. Something like that, the woman says lightly. We're waiting on Nate, Elliot says. Hardison, this is Di. Di, this is my coworker Hardison. Nice to meet you, Di says. Though, Di is my name off time. Right now, I'm here in my official capacity as Sister Dimondo Tension, mistress of the purse for the Birmingham chapter of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Ah, Hardison says eloquently. Nuns? Something like that, she says. It is a vocation, but the vocation is mostly to be loudly queer and raise money for good causes while pissing off the Catholic Church. Oh, Hardison says. I met Di in training for Delta Force. We kept in touch when we both got out. So, we're helping an old friend, Hardison says. I hope you can, Di says seriously. It's what we do, Elliot says. Nate walks in, and Hardison makes his polite goodbyes, and immediately goes to Google the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. He barely recognizes Di on their Facebook, with a wimple and a white cake makeup. The sisters seem like interesting people trying to do good. He hopes they can help. Nate's on board, so Hardison stays up all night putting together the presentation once he finds out why Sister Di hauled her ass all the way to Boston. All right, Samuel and Mary Grant, Hardison begins, rolling the slideshows, on a few thousand housing units in Birmingham. Not super big-time landlords, but big enough to do damage. They're mostly in the poor part of town, and in addition to the landlord shiftiness, they're also prominent members of, he clicks the presentation forward, the Light's Way Church, officially a pretty acceptable megachurch, but their hardline anti-LGBT stance has had them under fire for a while now. So, what the Grants have been doing is kicking people out of their housing because the tenant is gay or trans. Isn't that illegal? Sophie asks. Unfortunately, no. It is in some parts of the country, but not federally. It'll get done by the Supreme Court eventually, but for now, we're their best shot. A lot of these tenants are kids, Elliot adds.
17, 18, 19, and they don't have the money to go anywhere else, much less sue. And their case wouldn't be the one to make it big, Nate continues. Poor black trans kids aren't the right look for the ACLU's big, high-profile push. Right, Hardison says. So a few of them had met some of the good sisters at rallies and parties, and in the past and knew they had access to less conventional responses. And while this is a little outside their wheelhouse, it's right in ours. So what's our play? Parker asks. Nate looks pensive. I'd like to go down as soon as possible, Elliot says. Di and the sisters are doing their best, setting the kids up with shelter and food and school if they need it. But there aren't many of them, and it's not like any of them are rolling in cash. I can help out with that while y'all figure out the play. If nothing else, I've got the funds to help out. Nate nods. I'll probably want you to undercover eventually, either in one of the buildings or in the church. But, yeah, do what you can. I know the kids can't wait. Elliot nods and takes off. The con goes fairly well as cons go. It takes a couple of weeks, but they convince the Grants to pay too much for bad property and get the FBI to shake the church down for money laundering and tax fraud. And if Hardison buys up a few of the Grants' buildings on the cheap and gets the sisters to put out the news that the housing is now a no-discrimination zone, he doesn't need to mention it to the team. So, I talked to Elliot, Parker says. Hardison looks up, because when Parker talks, you listen. You never know what you might miss that she'll never say again. And what do you and Elliot talk about? People, she says. And words. Hardison nods. She elaborate, probably. Sometimes I want to kiss you, she says. That sounds very good to me, Hardison says. Not entirely sure how this connects, but very on board with where things are going. It sounds nice, she agrees. But it's new. I've never wanted to kiss anyone before. Boys, girls, they're all pretty, but in the same way paintings are. Nice to look at, but you don't do anything else with them. Okay, Hardison says. But then, she twists her face. But then there's you. And you're pretty. But you're not like a painting. You were, a long time ago, when we met. And now you're... I want to kiss you. Okay, Hardison says gently. Elliot says that this is normal. Well, not normal. Not common. That most people don't feel like this. Most people want to kiss celebrities or pretty people on the street. Hardison nods. But there are other people. Asexual. That's not wanting to kiss anyone or do anything else. And demisexual is... I think that's me. It made sense when Elliot described it. And what's that? You get to know someone. You get close and then you start thinking about them differently. They're not a painting anymore. But, she says, suddenly drawing back. I don't know how differently. And Elliot says that's okay. That I get to decide. Elliot's a smart guy. Who Hardison owes several beers for helping Parker with this. Because Hardison is out of his depth, but clearly she needed this. I'd love to kiss you. Whenever you'd like to kiss me. And then you just let me know what else you're interested in. Parker nods. Good. She kisses his cheek, almost perfunctorily, and walks off. Hardison goes to Google demisexuality, and then possibly call Elliot to have a talk about this stuff. Gay and bi, he totally gets. Trans, he's working on. The other stuff he's less sure about, but he'll figure it out. For Parker. The corporate goons of whatever evil CEO they're trying to take down this week are following them. And it's 2 a.m, which means that only a handful of doors are actually open. So they duck into the nearest one, off some alley, and are immediately hit with a wall of sound, just painfully loud. And when the neon and glare resolves itself into an image his brain can process, Hardison realizes that this is a gay book club. But apparently Elliot's reactions are faster than his are, because he's already pulling Hardison further into the crowd. When they're safely in the middle of things, Elliot pulls him closer, forehead to forehead, with his arms wrapped around Hardison's back. I don't know if they followed us in here, Elliot says quietly in his ear, but blending in with the civilians is safest. Hardison knows he's too stiff, but he's in a little bit of shock. Damn it, Hardison, Elliot says. I know this ain't your scene, but you know how to dance, so come on. And Hardison's brain finally gets back online, and he starts moving because he's had Parker over him during jobs before, and it's pretty much the same, except it's not, because he's into Parker, and he knows it. Even if she hasn't quite gotten there yet, they are definitely heading someplace. But it's less different than he expected. And anyway, Hardison refuses to be a no-homo kind of straight guy, especially not when there are enough guns behind them to make Elliot Spencer run. So he takes a deep breath, and he grabs around Elliot's waist, and presses them somehow even closer. He wants to close his eyes, to take a moment to get adjusted to the music, but he can't let his guard down that much. That's the second they'd get the drop on them. Elliot's counting on him to watch the exits, too. "Hey," Elliot says in his ear, and he's so damn close. Elliot never lets him get this close, but Hardison knows it's desperate times, because Elliot is grabbing the back of his neck, and Hardison knows what it looks like, that Elliot is doing this for the job, but he also knows that it's Elliot's demanding his detention, keeping him in the moment. "Hey," Elliot says again, "I've got you. We are getting out of this." And fuck. But Hardison believes him. So he leans into Elliot, tries to focus on the music, feels Elliot's hand at the small of his back, and focuses on the pressure, on the way he's shaking, but Elliot isn't. Elliot's solid. Always has been. And with that grounding him, it takes less time than Hardison expects for him to forget that they're running. After a couple of songs, his heart is beating with the music, not with anxiety. And that's when Elliot leans back into his ear. "All right," he says. "I think we're good to go out the front. But keep up the act. They're looking for two thieves, not two guys going home for the night. If you can fake a little tipsy, it'll help." "All right," Hardison breathes out, steadying himself. He can do this. He holds on to Elliot a little more tightly for just a minute. For luck. And then they meet eyes. For a second, the nose and the music and the residual panic all fades away. And the world just feels still. It's just Hardison and the man he trusts more than anyone else in the world. And they're going to get through this together. Elliot nods and grabs Hardison's hand, and the world starts to turn again. They stumble out the bar and lean up against each other, and Hardison lets Elliot pour him into a taxi and follow behind. They probably don't need to, but they hold hands the way to the address Elliot gives the driver. Hardison doesn't want to let go. It's something to focus on, something real, something safe. But once the cab pulls away, so does Elliot. They don't say anything as they go in through the front of the building, out through the back, and wait for Nate to come get them and Lucille. "Look," Hardison says finally, "I'm sorry I froze back there. I know that it's my job to be quicker so we don't get caught, that I should have reacted more quickly in the club, that you would never have let anything happen to me." There are a million ways to end that sentence, so he tries a different one. It was just, he isn't quite sure of that either. Unexpected, a lot, terrifying. "I get it, man," Elliot says. "It's fine." Somehow, Hardison feels like he fucked up, but he's not sure how. "So, you know how I normally don't want to kiss anyone?" Hardison turns to her, because her tone is light, but he knows it is important.
"Yep, I do."
"Well, not anyone but you now," she corrects.
"Mm-hmm."
She kisses him then, just lightly. Not for luck, just to prove her point. Demisexual and demiromantic, she smiles. Like Elliot said. Parker loves having words of her own, and Hardison is very proud. They make it work. "Well," she continues, "I still like kissing you a lot, but I realized the other day that I would also like to kiss Elliot a lot." Well, that isn't what he had been expecting, but maybe he should have. But acting surprised isn't going to get him and Parker to whatever she needs to talk out of this. So he plays it cool. "So what do you want to do about it?" "Well," she says, "I really want to know if you're bisexual too. You've never said, so I don't know if you're one of the people who likes girls or one of the people who says that they only like girls when they really like both. Or if you're like Elliot and you just like both. Because if you do like both, I think we should both kiss Elliot." "All right then. That was a suggestion." "I don't know," he admits. "I always assumed I only liked girls, but I don't know. Maybe not. I just..." "It's all right," Parker says, patting his hand. "You don't have to figure it out all right. You don't have to figure it all out right now. You can take your time." The words sound like Elliot's. And Parker, not known for her patience, gives him time. And he thinks about it. Because Elliot is theirs. Has been for a long time. Hell, Hardison does what he's told. He's made that palimony agreement for Parker years ago. Girl doesn't own much except her money. But what she owns, legally, it's his and Elliot's too. And Hardison didn't bother to tell anyone. He did the same. Now, if something happens to him, a nice chunk is going to Nana and the other kids. Elliot and Parker don't need that much. But whatever the brew pub turns a profit, Elliot and Parker get a third of it each. He just slips it in with the payout from whatever job they've taken most recently. They never say anything. Probably don't notice. It's not much by their standards, but it feels right. What's his is theirs. He knows Elliot probably doesn't do it that way. Probably got everything put away from his sisters and her kids. But there's more ways to belong than legal ones. So he thinks about that belonging. And he thinks about Han Solo. And he thinks about the way Elliot hugs him every fifth blue moon. And the way Elliot cooks and the way he is with kids. He thinks about Parker. And he thinks about the way Elliot lets her poke him and ask endless questions. The way he catches her every damn time she jumps. And he thinks about Frank Ocean and Captain Jack Harkness and the boy who lived down the street growing up. And the memory of Elliot's hand on his back in that nightclub. The way it felt to have Elliot hold him until he could breathe again. And sometime after DC, after Elliot holds him again and helps him to breathe, and everyone almost dies, and they save the world like the badasses they are, after all that, he answers Parker. "I still don't know," he says one night when they're on the couch, watching a movie, just the two of them, before she falls asleep, about liking boys and girls. "It's a big question." "I still don't get that," Parker admits. "It seems easy to me, but it's okay that it feels big to you." "Thank you. But what I'm trying to say is that I don't know about boys, but I know about Elliot, and I want to kiss him, and then some." Parker's face lights up, and she kisses him for joy. "I can't wait to tell him. Hey, now we may have to accept that he doesn't want to kiss us. That happens sometimes." "He does," Parker says with complete confidence. "I've been paying attention. He's starting to blink more often around us, like he does when there's someone he's trying to sleep with. He lets us touch him. He doesn't let other people touch him like that. And we're in the same room. He's watching us. More than even Nate or Sophie. I wanted to be sure. And I am." Damn, Parker is scary sometimes. And it's reassuring, but not conclusive. "Still," he says, "we all need to be on the same page. This is Elliot. We can't just tell him to come over and have fun and then kick him out." "We could never kick him out," Parker says. "He can always stay. He should stay. He's home." "Yeah," Hardison admits, what he's known for a long time now. Before he even thought about wanting Elliot, he loved him. "He is." By the time they finally work up the nerve to talk to Elliot about this, Hardison is almost impatient. Don't get him wrong. He's nervous as hell, but he's not changing his mind. He's still not sure about a lot of things, but he knows how he felt when he was dancing with Elliot that night in the club. How he felt in D.C. underneath all that panic. The way he's felt about Elliot a dozen times. It's not like Parker. With her, it's about the excitement. The jumping off a roof and never knowing what's coming, but trusting she's good enough to get him safely to the ground. With Elliot, it's about the safety. Knowing that Elliot will be there, no matter what. Completely solid. Hardison's realized there's something about being held by Elliot Spencer. He doesn't ever want to let Elliot go. "So, what's all this about?" Elliot asks, surveying them suspiciously, because he knows them all too well to not notice when something's up. "We want to kiss you, and would like to know if you would want to kiss us too," Parker says. "What she's trying to say," Hardison adds as Elliot stares back at them, "is that we want you in this relationship. Officially." "What?" "Apparently it's called polyamory. I know what polyamory is," Elliot interrupts. "Look, just because I'm bi doesn't mean I like everyone, or that I want to sleep with a man and a woman at the same time. That's not how that works." "But you do like us," Parker says confidently. "Both of us." Elliot deflates under her gaze. "Yeah, I do." "Good," Parker says. "So you'll date us." Elliot doesn't answer her and turns to Hardison. "You want this too? Being progressive and shit doesn't mean you're into dudes. You don't have to do this just because she wants it. And polyamory is different than threesome, and Hardison has had that conversation with himself about 100 times in between Parker asking him and now. And every fucking time, he's come up wanting Elliot. "Look," he says, meeting Elliot's eyes, because he wants Elliot to be sure. "I don't fucking know what my sexual orientation is. I'm not you. I wasn't sneaking out to gay bars in high school. But I have learned all this shit is complicated. So I may never find the right word for me. But I've thought about it. Really thought. and I know whatever else, I'm into you. And Hardison must have managed enough conviction that Elliot just nods.
All right, then.
So, now can we kiss? Parker asks, looking between them. Elliot gives enough assent that Parker climbs onto the couch next to him and kisses him like she means it. It's the only way she knows how. When she pulls back, Elliot has that little half-smile that means he's really happy. And Hardison just has to kiss it off his face.